Welcome back, everyone, to the Auckland Cricket Podcast. My name is Ian Laxon, and with me this afternoon, I have Jamie Lloyd and Neil Gray. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hello.
We have been away for a while, so apologies for that, but we are back, and there has been a whole bunch of cricket going on while we have been off the airwaves, and plenty to talk about. So we'll start, I guess, with the big issue of the day, or the big series of the day, the one that's been courting all the attention, the England versus India. 4-0, absolute trousers down, six of the best, with an absolute gulf between both sides, not just a comfortable victory, it was absolute thrashing. So what's our take on it? Do you think that was England being fantastically good, India being fantastically bad, or a combination of both?
I think it was England being fantastically good. They look exceptional as a unit. Batting, bowling, their fielding's of an incredibly high standard, and I think they caught slightly underdone Indian side a little bit on the hop, to be fair, and dealt them a pretty big blow early on, and losing Zahir Khan sent them into a bit of a spiral, and then from then it was pretty impossible for them to get back, apart from Rahul, the wall driving.
Yeah, and I know they lost Khan, and that's a big blow, but it did seem that just seemed to completely numb their entire attack, didn't it? It's as if they'd had nothing else as backup, no one of quality whatsoever. It's kind of amazing that a team of that talent would go there and be so hobbled by the loss of one admittedly really good bowler. It amazed me, really.
I think the writing was on the wall, though, as soon as Khan got injured. I think he is so crucial to their attack these days. Some of the other guys who have done good things for them in the past, like Sharma and even Harbhajan to a lesser extent, just aren't the bowlers that they seemed to be a couple of years ago. And yeah, the writing was on the wall for the bowling attack. But I think the biggest surprise was how redundant the batting lineup was. Yeah. In four tests, they only managed to scrape over 300 once.
But does that not say something about how well England batted, perhaps, more than...
Well, and bowled, I think.
Bowled, yeah, that's what I meant, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, take nothing away from England. I think they played really well. They just kept the pressure on England, on India all the time. I think across the four matches, there were probably only two sessions that India won, which is huge. I mean, if you only win two sessions in a four-match series,
you're going to get bummed.
Yeah, going to get bummed 4-0. So it was a very dominant display. And again, it brings up the questions around the age of the Indian batting lineup.
Yeah, I was just going to ask that. It's like, it's been a bit of a golden era for them, really, I guess the last two or three years, going to number one, winning the World Cup, having some fantastic players, but Lakshman, Tendulkar,
Dravid,
Sehwag, all well into their 30s.
Are
they actually now past it?
Yeah. So if you take it in order, Sehwag only played the two tests, and I think he was still injured. He was rushed back as an emergency measure. He wasn't fit. He's only going to play one way. That way he's never really going to work in English conditions, because the ball, just the
moves around,
the leveler of the conditions brings the bowlers back into it, rather than in India, where he's lethal. So Sehwag, I think, obviously, has his style, and I think he will survive. Dravid was obviously, is the oldest, I think, maybe, close to Tendulkar, and was easily their best player.
Yeah.
Tendulkar, I think, was consistent without
consistently average, really.
Well, if you look, he was...
Especially by his own high
standards. By his own high standards, yes, but... He was their second top run scorer.
Yeah,
he
can't judge him
runs.
By other people's standards.
Yeah.
You judge him by his own
standards. Yeah, disappointing by his standards, but I think Lakshman struggled big time. But again, a lot of it comes back to lack of preparation, lack of planning as well. Lakshman was having to bat at three when he would rather probably bat five a lot of the time.
Gambier
was just soft all the way through.
I must admit, I was surprised that one of those younger guys didn't slot into the middle of that.
The more worrying thing, rather than the older guys, that's more of a concern in the bowling, I would say. There's no young bowlers really coming through. Is that the young batsman that they used, which was Suresh Raina, was terrible. He was the worst of the six, probably. So that's more of a concern, that they don't have any young guys pushing these guys. And Virat Kohli sat for four test matches while he didn't score 300 carrying the drinks. So
he should have played. He should have played three, in my opinion. But maybe we're seeing the result of a diet of T20 cricket from some of these guys. I think Raina in particular, you know, he's a 2020 superstar. And some of these guys who are the future of the Indian batting lineup are just, you know, bred on T20 now. Sure, they test cricket apparently is still the, you know, the peak for them, but you've got to question whether it really is when you see the way they got dismissed in a number of the innings.
Yeah, there's been quite a bit of call about that, about where the BCCI is actually putting its emphasis and stress on stuff. So I think we can pretty comfortably say India, yeah, can do better, would be their comment. But
the person I feel the most sorry for is Duncan Fletcher.
Yeah, sure. Poor fella. Anyway, I'm sure he's been compensated for it. England, on the other hand, is this really a beginning of their golden age where they're going to dominate for years to come? If you look at that side, there's only a few guys who are
Strauss, isn't
really over 30s, and looking in that, what we've just been talking about, you know, close to retirement age, there's an awful lot of young talent in there, isn't there?
Well, I think them and South Africa are clearly the two best sides, you know, as all-round cricket sides. I'm talking Test one day and T20 at the moment. I think India will continue to be a force in the shorter formats, but until they can find a, you know, decent bowling attack and have their batting lineup fire again, I think they're going to struggle to be challenging for the top two spots in Test cricket. So I think, yeah, England and South Africa.
England are so strong. They've got that plug and play system going on. Like, they lose one guy and they can just plug someone else in. Like, I mean, they lose Trott, who's been a run machine. They move Bell from 6 to 3, and they put someone like Papara in, who's got a pretty decent test record, comes and goes, but 6 is one of those positions where you can try, and they've got a bundle of guys knocking on the door.
Which kind of reminds you of the awesome Aussie teams of recent times, really, so doesn't it, where
just
somebody had to score
10,000
first class runs before they could get in, and when they did, they just took their chance and ran with it.
It was the same with the bowling attack. I mean, they lost, was it Tremlett early on, and
Brock
Bresnan came in and took a bucket load of wickets.
And Finn didn't even play, who was one of the best bowlers in the Ashes series.
Yeah, it's true.
And
so they've got depth all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Yeah, Onions is just coming back.
Their main concern is finding a second good spinner, but
it's a mouth-watering prospect because, you know, they're in much the same position as the Black Caps. So you know, next summer it'll be a great Test series, won't it?
Huge Test series.
Yeah.
So how are they? Oh, you were being ironic.
That was irony. Might have been lost on the listeners. It was lost on Neil.
Like 10,000 spoons.
Enough said. Yeah, I don't know either, Neil.
And all you need is a knife. Isn't that ironic? Come on, Alana, speak up.
The woman who doesn't understand irony. Yeah. When things are just coincidental, strange, or annoying.
Yeah.
That is not irony. Anyway, here endeth the English lesson. We'll move back to cricket. Other international cricket going on. Australia versus Sri Lanka. Yeah, pretty much. But it's going to lead us into something else. So bear with me,
okay,
Jamie.
Sorry.
3-2 in the one days, although that was 3-1 by the time the Sri Lankans won the last one. Test match starts, I think, next week. Don't look at me like that, Neil. It's true. I looked on Crick Info. I did my research. But more importantly, the Argus review.
Just touching on some key performances, though, from those five.
Well, please do.
Another hat-trick for Lasith Malinga.
In the fifth one day, correct.
Yeah, a third one-day international hat-trick, which I think is a record.
It is.
Yeah. Ricky Ponting, leading average for the Australian batting team.
Mm.
He's back. And Ajantha Mendes, is he back as well?
Got 6 foot, didn't he?
6 foot, a couple
of
three.
Oh, wasn't it? That was the 2020, actually, wasn't it? The 6 foot.
Yeah, in
the T20. It was the best ever.
Back to being unplayable?
Nah.
Question mark?
Don't reckon.
Home conditions.
He's
rubbish everywhere.
He was
else.
The superstar. He's now just become slightly good. And nah, sorry. Don't rate that one at all.
Ponting
is playing out his salad days, but has another one good season, I would say, before. Well, actually, he won't just fade away because I don't
he's
think Ricky Ponting
to
can fade away.
New Zealand around the park in the summer.
Yeah, but, you know, that's not a international quality player. Going to hold up that standard, then we're looking at an awful lot of players. Anyway, the Argus review, to wallow a wee bit more in Australian misery, is something that he's a High Court judge or similar, I think, tasked to look into the entire Australian cricket setup after the Ashes defeat and come up with conclusions, recommendations, etc., etc. And he hasn't pulled too many punches into what he's come out with. Said a whole bunch of stuff about the team, culture, the coaching structure, the desire of the players. Neil's actually read it from cover to cover, so can provide some more detail on
that. Insightful.
Yeah. But it's very interesting. It's extremely frank, I think is the way you could describe it.
It's ruffled a few feathers.
Yes.
Messrs. Chapel.
Yeah, well, the initial, I guess, let's just say what the immediate outcomes are, that there's a full-time national selector. So Andrew Hilditch is gone.
Yeah, so the interesting thing about that is that Hilditch actually asked for that
to happen. Yeah, and Greg Chappell is also can't be a selector because they reckon he's got
he's
a bit of a conflict.
National
of
selection man, national
he's a,
identification man.
Yeah, that's right. So
yeah,
he can't be a selector at the same time,
yeah,
they say.
Probably the most interesting thing that I find is that they want to create this role of someone that is accountable. So they
did it strike you when you were reading it? I just read the Bracey about that selection panel and the way they were going and accountability. Did it strike you? It sounded quite familiar in terms of what John Buchanan was trying to set up with New Zealand.
So they basically want to create what Buchanan's created, and they still haven't appointed yet, though, is that national selection manager. So they want that. They're not calling it that. It's like national, I can't remember what the title is, but basically this person will be accountable for the performance of the Australian cricket team. And then the coach and the captain will answer to him. He will be the...
Is he like a high-performance manager or something?
Yeah, basically. Mm. The high-performance manager of the Australian cricket team.
And the coach and captain are on the selection panel as well, which is interesting.
Has the structure changed much over the last 15 to 20 years?
Of what?
Well, all these recommended changes. Is this something that has developed over the last 3 or 4 years, or is it something that's been in place for a while and it's outgrown the team? Or?
This selection structure, the selection panel has been the same for quite a long time.
Because it has the fear, for me, as someone who hasn't read the report, doesn't really understand exactly what's going on, but it feels like this is a team that's got all the arrogance and confidence of the great team of the 90s and early 2000s, but just doesn't have the guns to back it up.
Well, that's
and
the
so
interesting
it's kind of,
thing.
Kind of falling apart at the seams.
Because Argus was obviously the main man, but there was this Argus Review Committee, which was 5 people, 3 of which were Taylor, Border, and
one other
Walt, Steve Waugh.
That's right, yeah.
So you've the 3 of the best Australian captains.
Mm.
Argus, and then they'd James Sutherland, who's the CEO of Cricket Australia. That's what that made the captaincy being on the selection panel as well interesting for me, because Taylor was quoted as saying that he always felt that even though he wasn't on the selection panel when he was in charge, if he wanted someone, he got them. Probably hasn't been the case in recent years since Ponting took over. I would say that selection panel become more powerful, whereas Waugh probably had that same kind of we'll pick this guy.
It's interesting what comes out of it. It's also interesting to see the Australians gnashing their teeth and wailing about the state of their game.
Be interesting to see how they go in the tests, because one day performance was never really a mega issue for them.
No.
So it'll be interesting to see how they shape up against Sri Lanka in the tests.
What's their bowling lineup going to be?
A lot of young guys.
Yeah, they've taken that young, quick guy. I can't remember, sorry. And Lyon, who's the spinner that nobody's heard of. Yeah, so it will be quite a different bowling lineup, I'd say. Right, enough Australia. Let's come home and talk about the Aces, actually, because they announced their final squad for the Champions League this week, and they're off to Australia before they head to India next Friday. I think they actually leave
today,
their shores. So final 15, not too many surprises in it really, but a heck of a lot of experience. You've got current black caps in Martin Guptill, Chris Martin and Kyle Mills. You've got former black caps in
Daryl Tuffey,
Lou Vincent,
Hopkins,
yep,
McIntosh,
plus then you've got
Did you guys mention
Andre? Yeah, probably Andre. Did. Yeah, and then hopefully we've got Jimmy Adams as well.
And Rob Quiney.
And Rob Quiney from Victoria. Plus, you know, some guys who did great things in the HRV Cup, like Colin Munro, Ronnie Hearer, Collins Gronholm, etc. So, yeah, I think it's a really strong-looking side, eh?
And, I'm excited.
Yeah, and we've now seen all the other sides' lineups as well, which we stack up pretty well against, although there's some huge amount of talent in some of those. Calcutta Knight Riders, who we've got first up, have got the likes of Jack Cullis, Brad Haddin, Galton Gambia,
Shaki Balhassan,
Ryan Tendiscarte,
Brett Lee.
So yeah, they've got a bit of talent too. But
the thing I like about the Aces is they're not reliant on one or two, you know, superstars to do everything for them. I mean, you could say someone like a Lou Vincent, you know, was pretty dominant in that T20 series, but really it was a team performance, and it's been that way for the last few years. Whereas you look at the likes of Otago or CD that have gone to the Champions League in the past, and they've been very reliant on, you know, Brendan McCullum or Ross Taylor to come off, and haven't.
Well, the thing there was that Brendan McCullum didn't come off for them, and they didn't have Ross Taylor last year, did they?
Because
he got bought out, all of a sudden they were nobbled. Jamie Howe was actually by far and away their best player. But he averaged 60 or something ridiculous. He was on fire, but nobody else did virtually anything.
Yeah, because he butted the 20 overs.
But you look at HRV, the HRV Cup. I mean, Jimmy Adams was our top scorer with, it was 250 runs or something like that, and he only averaged, you know, about 30. But people chipped in all the time, you know.
Mm.
Colin Munro got a 60 one day, somebody else got a 15 another day. And it was as much about our bowling and especially our fielding that I think won us those games. So, yeah, I think you're totally right. I think it's a real cliche, but it's all about the team for the Aces, and if they perform like that, then I mean, if they get that first win up against the Knight Riders, it could be a way of laughing.
Yeah, they're the sort of team that can get on a roll as well. Let's hope they get that first win.
Well, I was talking to Hoppy today actually, and you know, put it to him, and it's the best possible prep. If you win those first two games, make the main draw, you've had the best practice games you could possibly have in terms of coming into the main tournament.
Mm.
Coming in hot.
Yeah, so watch this space, because next time we come back in a couple of weeks, we will be going Champions League mad and looking at all the teams, exactly what the chances are. We might even have some interviews with Aces players as well. It will be excitement personified. So, yeah, watch this space. And what else are we going to talk about? We've got more overseas cricket, which does have a bit of New Zealand angle to it, admittedly. Zimbabwe, Bangladesh. It's a shame that
Zimbabwe.
Neil Rye's not here, because he would be all over the Zimbabwe result, I'm sure. But we'll do it in his absence. Zimbabwe rolled, Bangladesh in the test match, didn't they?
Yes.
And then they rolled them in the one-day series
4-0,
as well.
4-0, I think
4-0.
It was. Yeah, they've absolutely wiped the floor with them. Oh, no, sorry, 4-1, I think. I think Al Hassan was injured for much of the one-day series, came back for the last game and basically won it for Bangladesh on his own.
It's a fantastic result first up, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Back in international cricket.
Yeah, I mean, the concern was that they were going to come back into international cricket and just be utterly hopeless. Yeah, the whipping boys.
Mm.
And, you know, to be fair to Bangladesh, they've come a long way, but they're not exactly the benchmark for, you know, are these guys going to be really able to compete?
But they are bottom.
Yes,
so
that's right.
Zimbabwe obviously have come in, beaten bottom, so now they're second bottom.
True.
Mm.
And they're coming up against the team that must be just above
one
them.
One above them, yeah.
I think New Zealand are above the West Indies, are they not?
Ooh, touch and go, I'd say.
Two great sides.
Well, I guess the good news is, though, is that, let's face it, for a series that is going to be tough to promote and get people excited about, at least you can now point to the fact that, well, they're not going to be total easy beats if they roll Bangladesh quite as convincingly.
Hey, the player of the series was called Vittori.
Was
for
he
Zimbabwe.
Really?
Yeah.
His first name or his last name?
Last name.
Is he turnable?
I think he was their opening quick.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Is it like a black player?
I think so. Vittori. But the cool thing was that it was a number of guys that actually performed for them. Again, similar to
the
Aces.
You're making racial eyes at me, you know. All I'm asking is, it's all more unusual to have a black player named Vittori than it is to have a white player named Vittori.
Yeah. Slightly different spelling. I think from what I saw, most of the team are black guys.
Yeah, which is
Timber, Taibu, that Taylor guy. Those two were probably the biggest scorers.
They've got an old dude, did they not?
Probably.
Some older dude that played back when Paul was playing, that's still playing, that scored a few runs.
I think that's fantastic, though, because that's really what they needed to be doing while they were away out of the game, wasn't it? Because you can't rely always on that white sort of class of quality cricketers, because I think that's slowly draining away and people are leaving. So you've got to have the black population really involved in producing good cricketers as well. So if they are, that's fantastic.
Absolutely.
And it'd be great to have a country from Africa that was basically largely black players doing really well, because it's not going to happen, or might never happen, in South Africa.
Yeah, no, it's good result, and I think it makes for a pretty interesting series. Well, two series, isn't it, against New Zealand.
We hope so,
because
we're playing a lot of them, just seeing quite a bit of them in the near future.
The new Sri Lanka.
And we are almost, I guess we can just flirtingly say club cricket is not too far away. So watch this space. It's only about 6 weeks away if you're a premier player. October the 8th, I think, is going to be the first day of club cricket. So as that time gets closer, we will give you whatever updates we can about who's going where and who's looking good, etc., etc. So stay tuned on that one. But that is pretty much us for another week, unless you boys have got anything else to share to the listener. No.
Nope.
Fantastic. Well, thanks everyone out there for listening. As I say, in 2 weeks' time, we are going to trawl through every single Champions League stat that we can find and give you all the good goss about the tournament before the Aces hit that qualifying tournament and make it through to the main draw. So until then, thank you for listening. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.